This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
For now, it appears they are hoping to be able to maintain control themselves. I think they are calculating that by removing Bashir, they will be meeting the principal demands of the protesters, and that then they will be in a position to manage the transition moving forward.
That's Joseph Siegel, director of the research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussing Sudan's military strategy in ousting the president. Also, the World Health Organization says it is rushing life-saving medical supplies to hospitals in and around the Libyan capital, Tripoli, as fighting intensifies. And suspected Al-Shabaab militants today abducted two Cuban doctors working in Mandera, a Kenyan town that shares a border with Somalia. We'll have these stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Protesters remain on the streets in Khartoum, angry over the military's plan to govern for 2 years. Amal Jabral, a leader with the Communist Party, tells the crowd the nation has revolted and gave huge sacrifices to change the Islamic political system led by Omar al-Bashir. Sudan's military is coming under pressure from inside and outside the country to scrap its plan to run the country for 2 years before turning over control to a civilian government. Celebrations that erupted on the streets after the army ousted President Omar al-Bashir yesterday were quickly replaced by discontent from protesters who want immediate moves towards democracy and civilian rule. The military has dissolved the parliament and other government structures, suspended the constitution, and imposed a 30-day nighttime curfew. The U.S. State Department urged the military to follow the will of the people and commit to the speedy handover to civilian rule. Sudan has been under U.S. sanctions since 2007. Washington also ordered non-essential U.S. personnel to leave the country and issued a strong advisory against travel there. A senior figure in the new military council, Colonel General Omar Zain Abdin, tried to calm protesters' concern. He denied that Bashir's ouster was a coup, but instead was a tool for change. Abdin said Bashir, who ruled the country for 30 years, is in custody and will face trial in Sudan instead of being handed over to the International Criminal Court. He faces charges of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide for his deadly campaign against insurgents in Darfur. The United Nations Security Council meets today to decide how to proceed. On the phone, we have VOA's UN correspondent, Margaret Bashir. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Margaret.
Thank you for having me.
So pushbacks coming from all directions. What is the UN stand on all this?
Well, yesterday the Secretary General called for calm and restraint by everyone, and he reiterated that the democratic aspiration of the Sudanese people should be realized through an inclusive transition process. I think there's concern here by diplomats that this two-year transition that the general is speaking about might be too long and may not be credible when it's stretched out that long. So right now the Security Council is meeting behind closed doors to discuss the situation, the current developments, because as you know, it's very fluid. And some of the Western ambassadors have called this meeting, the British, the United States, France, Germany, Poland, and Belgium. So they're concerned to keep an eye on what's going on there, because as you mentioned, Sudan has been on the agenda of the Security Council for more than a decade, President Bashir specifically for his actions in Darfur.
So will the generals in Sudan heed these calls? I mean, will they
Well, so far, I believe it's been peaceful. The protesters violated the curfew last night, but the military didn't act on them. So I think some see that as a good sign. But, you know, will it continue to be peaceful or will there be flare-ups? We don't know yet. But today, the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the United Nations, she called for the new leaders in Sudan to cooperate with the International Criminal Court and extradite Mr. Bashir. But the military has said they won't, which raises more questions here about whether if they try him domestically, if he could have a free and fair trial there, if it would be a credible sort of trial, or if it would just be, as we say, a kangaroo court.
So, Margaret, the rapporteurs in the UN, one on the rights of freedom of peaceful assembly and of association, and another for the rights of freedom of opinion and expression, urge the lifting of the state of emergency. How will that fare over there?
Well, I think we'll just have to wait and see. There is concern about it, that it's, you know, and the coupled with the curfew and all this. So, you know, here we actually have a small group of protesters in front of the United Nations today, and they were saying that, you know, you can't exchange one criminal for another because General Ibn Auf has a long history being close to President Bashir and has, you know, some culpability for what the atrocities that have happened over the years in Darfur. So the protesters here in New York are not happy about it, and they also want to see that the state of emergency lifted.
So, Margaret, lastly, while all this is going on, the reports indicate that about 800,000 people are in dire economic straits in Sudan, in East, North, South, and West Darfur, Red Sea, West Kordofan, and Nile states. Is the UN involved in any emergency relief over there right now?
I don't know that I would say emergency relief, but there's consistent relief operations throughout Sudan and Darfur. The UN has been there for more than a decade assisting, and, you know, since the price of bread has risen and the economy has been having trouble, more people fall into this food insecurity situation. And it's definitely troublesome and worrying for humanitarian officials here. They don't want to see the country go further into crisis.
VOA's UN correspondent Margaret Bashir, thanks for your input.
Thank you.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, is urging Sudan's new rulers to uphold the constitution and take heed of human rights as they try to move the country forward after the toppling of former President Omar al-Bashir. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Many things worry the High Commissioner about what she considers is a volatile and uncertain moment in Sudan's future. Michelle Bachelet notes the crisis in Sudan has its roots in human rights grievances. She says the solution to the crisis also must be grounded in human rights. Bachelet spokeswoman Ravina Shandasani says the High Commissioner fears the ousting of longtime President Omar al-Bashir by the army will not result in a more democratic, rule-based society. She says Bachelet is disturbed by the military council's announcement Thursday, saying it would suspend the constitution and would take charge of running the country during a two-year political transitional period.
We are very concerned about this. The constitution of Sudan needs to be upheld. There are important human rights protections that are contained within that constitution. We also understand that the announcement that was made yesterday didn't indicate any possibility for people to participate in this transition.
The High Commissioner is calling on the authorities to ensure the inclusion of civil society and of dissenting voices in charting a way forward. The International Criminal Court has issued a statement demanding Sudan's deposed president appears before the court to face justice. Al-Bashir is wanted by the ICC for alleged crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide committed in Sudan's Darfur region. Shamdasani tells VOA her office is encouraging the government of Sudan to fully cooperate with the ICC.
We are also calling for full accountability, including for the use of excessive force that has taken place since December this year. And we're calling for full respect for the rule of law.
Between 40 and 70 people reportedly have been killed and hundreds arrested since peaceful protests against the government of Omar al-Bashir began in mid-December. Bachelet is calling for an investigation into the killings and for the release of all those detained. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As we have reported, there is discontent on the streets of Sudan that power isn't being handed to a civilian government after yesterday's coup. That raises questions about whether the military's calculations are up to the demands of protesters who want change now. They defied the new curfew and are vowing to continue demonstrating. Joseph Siegel, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the issue.
We have been seeing the tensions build in Sudan for some time, and so we have been expecting something to break one way or the other. And so it appears the military has decided to try and proactively take control of the situation and remove al-Bashir, who is highly unpopular. And for now, it appears they are hoping to be able to maintain control themselves. I think they are calculating that by removing Bashir, they will be meeting the principal demands of the protesters, and that then they will be in a position to manage the transition moving forward.
But some opposition figures are fearing that Sudan is adopting the Egyptian model again.
Well, I think this is the risk, and it is notable that almost immediately many of the protest leaders have rejected the calls by the military to create this two-year military council. So they're not accepting that way forward, and instead they are calling for a civilian-led interim transitional council. And they are continuing to mount protest. And in fact, I understand protests are expanding. So I think the question that we're going to have to watch is whether the calculation from the military that just removing Bashir is sufficient. I think the initial reactions are that no, I think they've miscalculated and that the protests are going to demand more change than just simply removing al-Bashir.
But with the announcement of a curfew, how could the protesters continue their gathering while they are banned from being in the street during the night?
I think we're going to have to see how this plays out because, you know, there has already been a state of emergency, but protesters have continued to express themselves and come out onto the streets. And I don't see that they're going to stop that now. I think the military also has to be careful because if they resort to more heavy-handed violence, they're going to build up even more animosity on the part of the general population. We've seen some violence already from the security forces in the previous weeks during the earlier protest, but it has been somewhat restrained. Moreover, in the last week, we've seen some elements of the military and the police protecting protesters. So I don't think the security services are unified in how they are approaching this. And I think they need to be careful if they hope to retain some influence in the transition moving forward, that they continue to manage the support of the population. And I should say that I think because of the protection that some in the security services have provided the protesters, that I think there is a room for dialogue here between the military and the protest leaders. And I think there is an opportunity for them to work out some sort of cooperative arrangement for this transitional period that will lead to some sort of more representative system.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Now, 19 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Health Organization says it is rushing life-saving medical supplies to hospitals in and around the Libyan capital, Tripoli, as fighting intensifies and moves closer to the center of the city. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The United Nations says the civil conflict has displaced more than 8,000 people, nearly half of them in the last 48 hours. The World Health Organization says health facilities near Tripoli are counting at least 323 wounded and 75 deaths. The Tripoli airport has been hit by airstrikes. Because of the risks, UN humanitarian aid is not being flown into the airport. The WHO representative in Libya, Syed Jafar Hussein, says his agency is looking for alternative ways of getting critical medical supplies into the country. In the meantime, he says, the WHO has pre-positioned supplies in three strategic locations. Talking on a telephone from Tripoli, he tells VOA there are enough supplies for 2 to 3 weeks when he expects the crisis will peak in the city.
Looking at the intensity of conflict, we have contingency plan for accommodating more and more IDPs or expecting more and more IDPs in thousands, if not in hundreds of thousands, in the acute phase.
Hussein says the WHO is considering shipping supplies from its hub in Brindisi, Italy, or using the World Food Program's humanitarian helicopter service to airlift supplies in an emergency situation. He says the highest priority is for trauma care supplies needed to respond to severe casualties. He says patients with chronic illnesses usually are overlooked in crisis situations such as this. But he says the WHO considers it essential to provide chronic medication for people suffering from life-threatening illnesses such as diabetes. He says a major problem facing Libya is the large number of migrants who come from countries where tuberculosis and HIV is highly endemic. He says the WHO will have to bring in large supplies of drugs to treat those illnesses. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thousands of people are protesting in Algiers for an 8th consecutive Friday. Demonstrators waving Algerian flags and carrying signs are calling for the resignation of the ruling group, implementation of democratic reforms, and an end to corruption. Abdelaziz Bouteflika, who was in power for 20 years, stepped down from the presidency less than 2 weeks ago. He has been replaced by the head of the upper house of parliament, Abdelkader Bansalah, in what is seen as no real change. A presidential election is to be held on July 4th. Bensalah is barred from seeking office in that vote. However, the protesters are denouncing the ruling group that has held power since the North African nation's independence from France in 1962. On Wednesday, Algeria's army chief said he expected that people in power close to Bouteflika would face corruption charges. Reuters described the protests as peaceful, although there were reports that water cannon were used on them. Students and some officials have called for renewed protests in the capital and across the country. Algeria, a major oil exporter, has struggled to grow its economy. About one in four people under the age of 30 is unemployed. Suspected Al-Shabaab militants today abducted two Cuban doctors working in Mandera, a Kenyan town that shares a border with Somalia. According to the Kenyan police, the two were abducted at 9 a.m. and the militants crossed over with them into Somalia. Rael Ombor reports.
Kenya's police spokesperson Charles Owino told reporters that the two doctors, Asel Herrera Correa and Landy Rodriguez, along with their security escorts, were on their way to work at the Mandera Referral Hospital when they were attacked.
Under the escort of two police officers, one officer from Administration Police and the other one from Kenya Police Service, respectively, along the way, they were blocked by two Probox cars Unfortunately, the administration police officer was shot and fatally wounded. The criminals commandeered the car and the occupants across the border to Somalia.
The two doctors were part of a group of 100 Cuban doctors who came to Kenya last year under a bilateral agreement aimed at improving health services in the country. Herrera and Rodriguez were posted to Mandera County, an area that is considered insecure because of its close proximity to Somalia and its record of multiple Al-Shabaab attacks, often directed towards non-locals. The two doctors had 24-hour security protection. This is the second abduction of a foreigner in Kenya in a span of 6 months. In November last year, Italian volunteer Silvia Romano was abducted by gunmen in Malindi, Kilifi County. Somali-based Islamists are thought to have been behind the abduction. Al-Shabaab militants continue to wage a war against Somalia's foreign-backed government and have carried out numerous attacks in Kenya. The latest was on January 15, when the terror group claimed responsibility for an attack on a Nairobi office complex in which at least 21 people were killed. As for the Cuban doctors, Kenyan authorities said Friday that all security agencies had been mobilized and they are pursuing the assailants. The doctor's driver is being held for interrogation. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
The World Health Organization is holding a special meeting today on the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Experts working with the WHO are to decide whether to declare the outbreak a global health emergency. The meeting comes as the DRC Health Ministry is expected to say it recently had the largest single-day increase, 18 new cases, since the disease began to spread 9 months ago. The meeting today is the second time an emergency committee of outside experts has been asked to advise the WHO Director General. The question is whether the outbreak meets the conditions to be declared a public health emergency of international concern. A committee met last October and decided against making a declaration. As of yesterday, 1,206 confirmed and probable cases have been identified, including 764 deaths. The infections have been centered in the eastern part of the country. The WHO notes that the outbreak is taking place in a conflict area. That hurts health officials' efforts to fight the disease. In late February, two Ebola treatment centers operated by Doctors Without Borders were attacked, causing the aid group to withdraw from those areas. Since then, the DRC Health Ministry and the WHO have reopened the centers. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.